This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. On today's roundtable, we'll talk about the revelation in South Florida that some police officers and firefighters have been buying steroids. And a new cartoon titled Minoriteam pokes fun at racial stereotypes. Joining us today to discuss these topics and more, from Harvard University Studios, Callie Crossley, social and cultural commentator on the television show Beat the Press in Boston. And Marcelo Suarez Orozco, professor of globalization and education at New York University. He's in our New York bureau. Plus, Robert George, editorial writer at the New York Post. He's also in the Big Apple. Thank you all and welcome.
Good to be here.
So before we get to all these topics, let's start with U.S. Labor Secretary Alexis Herman, former Labor Secretary. She was talking about the Democrats in 2008 rejiggering the way that we get into the primaries. Now, the GOP has been floundering for some time, yet critics have said that no Democratic leaders have pounced on the opportunity to gain ground. Marcelo, is that accurate?
Yeah, I think that would be accurate to say that even though there are very important opportunities and openings now, the Democrats are proceeding perhaps too cautiously in moving forward the agenda that will be needed to take back the White House and the Congress.
Robert, let's go to you. You often write about how the GOP operates on the national scene. What are people in the GOP, the Republican Party, saying about what's going on and the Democrats, in some cases, inability to capitalize on any Republican issues?
Well, I think Farai, off the record, Republicans, for the most part, are saying, "Thank goodness that the Democrats can't get their act together," because I think Republicans recognize that they've got a heck of a lot of liabilities going into the midterms. Obviously, you've got the ongoing Iraq War, but even worse are issues involving Katrina, the deficit, this kind of general sense that the White House and Congress is out of touch, particularly corruption within the Republican Congress involving a delay, Duke Cunningham resigning, a number of others possibly facing indictment. They see what could be a real gathering storm against them. However, the fact that so far, at least, the Democrats haven't really come up with what can be considered a comprehensive alternative to go up against the Republicans. So right now, the best thing that the Republicans have going for them is the, for want of a better word, the incompetence of the Democrats.
Callie, let me throw you back to the thing that started this, the Democratic Party rejiggering its primaries, trying to get different states and different faces into the mix early. Is that really important?
It's absolutely important. I think that former Labor Secretary Alexis Herman was clear about that. I mean, we look at the populations of Iowa and New Hampshire and recognizing that for so long, really up to this point, these are the states that make a determination about what the face of the parties will be, and it eliminates folks who might have something else to offer. I note that last week in New Hampshire, for example, was already Bill Richardson and Mitt Romney on the Republican side and Wesley Clark and Richardson for the Democratic side. These are folks already up there. They haven't announced, but they're, you know, feeling it out, trying to see what's going on. So we can see that these states have an important role to play, and if they are to be the only places that the parties come away with a determination about who should represent them, then I think that folks of color, and not just African Americans, are once again shut out of the process in a big way.
The system is especially anachronistic, as the census data suggests. The real center, demographically speaking, of the nation is moving away from those two regions of the country, increasingly towards the West and really the Southwest. So there is really an out-of-touch quality to the system we have now in place in terms of failing to acknowledge the demographic transformation and the new locus, gravitational locus of the future of our country.
I'm not
Marcello and going to Robert.
Yeah, I'm certainly not privy to the insides of the Democratic Party, so I'm not going to necessarily advise them. However, I would say, however, that part of the problem I think that the Democrats have had is a perception that their party is slightly and particularly Kerry in the last election, their party is too liberal for the rest of the country. And one of the things that having, say, Iowa and New Hampshire come in early is they are relatively speaking somewhat conservative states, and it may actually behoove the party to keep those states foremost in the primary process. But you know, that's for the Democrats to figure out.
Well, I want to move on to something that could become a social issue in some campaign down the road. Along with the ABC's New York City kindergartners, will now learn about HIV. Starting today, kindergartners in public schools will be taught that HIV is a germ, it's not easy to get, and that it could cause AIDS. Now, the changes are required by New York state law, but parents can opt out by writing a letter to the principal. Is this absolutely necessary for kids so young? Callie.
I think that we're living in a time when this is important information. Now, my question is, how is it going to be done? Because once again, you're just dumping it on the teachers. They don't have any training to talk about it. And I think it does a disservice to say it's a germ and, you know, it's a bad thing. There's a lot of germs that are bad for people. It doesn't really raise it to the level of importance that I think is behind the initiative of trying to get out to kids what's going on. Now, some have suggested, well, the kids are hearing about this and they're seeing people in their families and they know something about it. So we have to begin somewhere to discuss it. I think all of that is true. But how you do it is extremely important. And this just makes me a little nervous because I don't see that there are elements in place to make certain that the folks who would be disseminating the information can do it in a way that's good. And plus, I think you're going to hear from a lot of parents saying, hey, that's my job to discuss this, not the school system.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you 100% there. I just think I think kindergarten is ridiculously too young to be telling kids this kind of stuff when you don't have you're not exactly able to tell them that it's about sex or drugs and so forth. If there is a family member that becomes ill, in just the same way as if a family member, for example, got leukemia, for example, the parents would have to explain them, well, you know, aunt so and so is sick, and then just leave it at that. You put teachers into way too much of an awkward position taking a serious issue like that and trying to impart it into a kindergarten language.
Well, Robert,
this is made.
Go ahead, Marcello.
Jump in. This is made even more complicated by the fact that we know through basic research that children bring into the classroom very early on powerful misconstruction of scientific medical issues, and to start a conversation about HIV/AIDS. With scientifically ungrounded and erroneous concepts, HIV is not a germ, quote unquote. It seems to me it opens a kind of worms that would down the road be difficult to address more systematically and more seriously. When are children ready to metabolize these complicated medical and scientific facts is a question that needs to be addressed. And I concur that we're asking too much of teachers that will be having to answer questions. What if a child wakes up in the middle of the night saying, you know, I didn't wash my hands. Now, do I have HIV? It seems to me that there are important issues here that need to be addressed that haven't really been addressed. Are the children ready developmentally to manage these these concepts? Do we have a space to contain the anxiety and the concerns that children will inevitably develop as they learn more about these issues? It seems to me that this is we need to proceed more cautiously here.
Let's go to West Palm Beach, Florida, where 13 officers are facing suspensions for anabolic steroids. A local company said that between 50 or 60 law enforcement officers and firefighters across the country patronize them, buying these steroids, which can cause roid rage, or anger. How dangerous is it for officers to use these kinds of drugs without proper medical supervision? Marcelo.
This scares me.
It's very dangerous. It's very, very dangerous that to have officers auto-medicate, self-medicate. I mean, these are prescription drugs, and it seems to me that they need to be regulated like all other drugs for side effects, for long-term medical side effects and consequences. And it simply is unacceptable to have these self-medication.
These officers have been suspended. Kelly, is that enough?
Well, no, because the taking of the drugs is illegal. So that seems to be counterweighted against their whole role as to be folks who uphold the law with regard to the police officers. And I guess there are some firefighters as well. But I just get the image of these people just sort of hyped up on these drugs out there having to make hair trigger decisions. It's awfully scary on so many levels. Certainly for the police officers, you know, with the illegality and what they're supposed to be doing, that's ridiculous. I think it's more needs to be happening here.
Yeah, I think we're seeing, obviously it's been primarily been in sports we're seeing the explosion in steroids, but from professional athletes down to the high school and in some cases elementary school level, you're seeing kids using it, and obviously it seems to be spilling over into other areas of society. And I think we'd be very, very hesitant to allow people. You just heard the phrase "hair trigger." I mean, you've got people who actually, you know, have their finger on the gun, possibly using illegal substances, putting them into their body. And obviously, people who are going into burning buildings, trying to bring people out, they're endangering themselves and endangering the people they're trying to whose lives they're trying to save as well. So, I mean, I think this is a serious problem, and it may even be more widespread than what we see down in Florida.
Well, Robert, you know, this company that was selling these drugs, it's a local company called Power Medica, which is now defunct. They were telling people to get a doctor's recommendation and then send stuff on the internet. A lot of people could argue who have been through similar situations like this, I was trying to follow the law. And there are a lot of confusing laws around buying drugs on the internet. Should there be more done on that front from the government standpoint of preventing people from transacting drugs and medical paraphernalia online?
I'm somewhere in between on that. On the one hand, I get a little bit leery when I see the government wanting to get in the middle and do more regulation. At the same time, as I said, steroids is a dangerous it's a dangerous business, and it's even more dangerous for some people than others. Whether it's cops who have guns, or people in construction, or you know airplanes or so forth, are operating heavy equipment. I would say that particularly the case where you have a lot of these businesses that are within the United States, certainly there should be some more policing of them. Part of the problem, obviously, that we have many of these places now locate themselves offshore, which makes it that much harder for, say, the FDA and other federal authorities to regulate them.
I have a final issue for you guys to tackle, and it's not very politically correct. It's a new cartoon called The Minority Team on Cartoon Network. It had its premiere last night. The team is made up of superheroes, including a half-Jewish, half-Mexican crime fighter and a black superhero who runs really fast to burn off anger. They use these racial stereotypes to fight bigotry. Let's listen to a clip.
It's another average day in Corporate City. average, because as always, evil is being plotted by the most evilest organization known to man, the White Shadow.
Minions, I have summoned you here today because black-owned businesses are gaining in power.
Rah! Rah! Me hit blacks with hands. Me tired of blacks. Raises Frankenstein. Hate the blacks.
All right, Callie, one of the creators of this show is Latino. Is this a bit too far?
Well, you know, I watched this and I watched a couple episodes because I just wanted to just see how I felt. Here's the thing. It's written quite well. It's very distasteful to me because I think that anytime you use the stereotypes to this exaggeration, a lot of people just don't get the joke. And that's the problem. I think actually the creators are way more sophisticated than a lot of folks who will be looking at this to confirm what they believe to be true about certain minority groups. And so that's the problem. It happened with All in the Family. Norman Lear realized right away that, hey, I could put out Archie Bunker and make him sound crazy, and I think it's funny, and don't people get the joke? Well, they didn't. They thought he was funny, and they thought he was funny because of what he was saying and agreed with it. So that's the problem. It's cleverly done. I think, you know, it's meant to be to really challenge some folks around their stereotypes, but I fear that for a lot of people, they just won't get the joke.
We've only got a minute left.
The issue, again, like in the earlier story of HIV and kids, is that this is aimed to children, and it will reinforce certain stereotypes, and a lot of the humor and a lot of the more subtle thinking will be missed,
and you're playing with fire. We should keep in mind, though, this particular show is part of the Cartoon Network's Adult Swim, so it's on late at night, so it's not focused on kids. I'm going to be interested in watching it, because I think we've seen other things such as Undercover Brother, which started out as a satire online and became a movie. The Boondocks as well. They're utilizing cartoons to poke fun at stereotypes, and so I'm hoping that this is going to be a funny thing and something that can be looked at both on the level of teaching people about stereotypes, but also just funny and amusing and entertaining.
Robert, you get the last word. In New York, Robert George, editorial writer, New York Post, plus Marcelo Suarez Orozco, university professor of globalization and education at New York University, and in Cambridge, Massachusetts, Callie Crossley, social cultural commentator on the television show Beat the Press in Boston. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you.